This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via email. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the place to send your questions, so please make them succinct and answerable in a bite-sized chunk, and we'll answer them on the air for you. This is a feature we do each week. And so chances are it may be a week or two before our inventory is exhausted and you get into our question queue. But keep listening, because eventually we'll tackle your question. So how you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good. And for new listeners, Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. We work hand-in-hand on a daily basis. She's a registered dietitian, and she is also a possessor of a master's degree in the field of nutrition. So, what's up today? What's going on?
We've got an interesting note from somebody who wrote into us.
Yeah.
Is very, very upset about all the eggs she's been eating. Her name is Kathy, because apparently there's a column in her local newspaper in Jersey where Dr. Oz and Dr. Michael Roizen say, well, you still shouldn't have more than maybe an egg a week because guess what? TMAO. Remember that?
Yeah. Dr. Oz is not too much involved in that. I think it's Dr. Roizen who handles those columns. Mm. And I'm not familiar with his viewpoint. He may be so. I know that Dr. Oz is more kind of an omni kind of guy. He eats widely.
Yeah.
And although he doesn't eat a paleo diet, incidentally, I just read an article that said that. I keep calling him George Bush. Bush, the Bush that's running in the Republican primaries, inextricably.
Oh God, is
caught
Jeb
up,
running?
Jeb's running. Oh yeah. Oh, where have you been? Oh my goodness. Well, I think you're successfully shielding yourself from the political camp. It's kind of like I'd like to say, wake me up when it's over, you know. But I keep looking at the news. So anyway, Jeb is running. Well, actually, I don't think he's actually formally declared, but he's in the hunt. And but this is not about politics. This is about his diet. He has disclosed in an interview that he has gone on a paleo diet.
Oh.
And he actually looks different. I mean, he's kind of a little chunky looking, you know, kind of looks like he's got a little baby fat in his cheeks the last few times we've seen him.
As opposed to W, yeah.
As opposed to W, he's pretty fit guy, you know, used to cycle a lot, and, you know, he seemed like a pretty... like a kind of an action figure kind of guy. So Jeb's getting on the wagon. He's losing weight with the paleo diet. Who knows? We may have a paleo president. That'd be some small consolation for continuing dynastic politics in America. If it's a Bush versus a Clinton, then, more of the same, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's the celebrity news. Yeah, look, I mean... I think that anybody who says that you should limit your egg intake is acting on obsolete science. If you really look at the actual epidemiology, I mean, you can look at theories, and you can look at some biochemical obscure fact like TMAO gets made by some people who eat a lot of eggs. But then you look at the epidemiology. The epidemiology says that people who eat eggs actually not only do they not have worse cardiovascular risk. But they may have somewhat reduced, like a dramatically reduced risk of diabetes. We did a story, it was last week or the week before, about 30% reduction in diabetes with something like, 4 eggs per week, 6 eggs per week, something like that. So a moderate consumption of eggs, perfectly fine for the vast majority. Yeah. I mean, there are some rare, I think we don't see them too often because it's so rare, but there are some people who have rip-roaring high cholesterol genetically.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that for some of those people that egg consumption is disadvantageous, but those people get put on drugs anyway. And so regardless,
that's true.
You know, they're it's like the drugs attenuate the effects of the diet, mm-hmm. allow you to incorporate some healthy eggs. You know, and the biggest problem is, you know, I see a lot of people eating egg whites, and you know what happens then is that they're getting, okay, they're getting some protein, but they're not getting the yolks, which are rich, especially in lycopene.
Yeah.
So they're lowering their cholesterol there, but many of them are on statins too. So they're on statins, they're eating dutifully eating egg whites, you know, cholesterol's the enemy. So it's, you know, it's kind of like paint by numbers. It's easy. You know, it's like cholesterol's bad, so let's not take in any, let's lower it with a drug. And then the net result is they develop macular degeneration because they don't get any lutein and zeaxanthin, which is in the egg yolk. Egg yolk is actually a superior source of those nutrients.
By the way, the supposed bad guy I hear with regard to TMAO is choline, but choline is an essential nutrient. It's required for normal liver function, muscle function, fetal development. So, you know, additional study is needed. And I'm quoting this from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition in 2014. They need more study to confirm if there is any association between TMAO and atherosclerosis.
Right.
Because there are other factors like genetics, like you said, and the microbiota.
Right. Well, exactly. It may be that TMAO production is a sign of dysbiosis, of an abnormal intestinal flora. And that actually, I read a very interesting article in the New England Journal of Medicine that was about TMAO. And what they ended up saying was that it wasn't so much about dietary restriction of foods that are rich in choline or rich in carnitine. Carnitine is another thing that can go into TMAO, so it scared people for a while about carnitine. But it was about trying to find the right, this is very New England Journal of Medicine, trying to find the right antibiotic to kill the bad bacteria that cause TMAO production. So they're looking, you know, let's find a drug that can lower cardiovascular risk. Hey, that we can make billions off that, right?
Yeah.
Oh. But I don't think there's a lot of money to be made in that on that proposition. And incidentally, one of the biggest sources of dietary choline is soy. And, you know, say what you might about soy. People who consume a lot of soy, they generally have a lowered risk of cardiovascular disease.
That's true.
Yep.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's because they consume soy, but again, you're making the point that the choline has little to do with it.
Yeah.
Or the TMAO,
By the way, choline, very essential nutrient in pregnancy. Good thing for pregnant ladies to consume. So eggs and pregnancy are a good thing in this case.
Yep.
Essential for brain development. You know, it's a building block for acetylcholine. And actually, some of the products that are designed for Alzheimer's and cognitive function are things like phoscol, which is rich in phosphatidylcholine.
Mm-hmm.
And
phosphatidylserine.
Phosphatidylserine. Those are essential phosphatides, which help the brain. So I wanted to digress because, you know, we got into questions. A big story this week, actually it came out last week, and I responded to it in our newsletter. So if you haven't seen my comments on it, please go to drhoffman.com. And look at my newsletter article, which is a response to the lurid headlines that suggest that vitamins can cause cancer. I mean, literally, that's what the headlines were saying. And this is based on a study. It really wasn't a new study. It was a compendium of old studies called a meta-analysis done by the folks at the Colorado Cancer Center. And they looked at a bunch of old studies. And we know that some old studies suggest that beta-carotene is not good for cancer. And it's based on studies looking at Finnish smokers that came out in the, I guess it was the early 1990s, that showed that Finnish smokers, they thought they were going to prevent cancer with them by giving them a lot of beta-carotene. And it turned out they actually got an increased risk of cancer. Surprise, surprise. They also were, the vast majority of them, alcoholic, so they had bad livers, and maybe they metabolized beta-carotene poorly because of their bad livers. It's kind of an atypical population. But anyway, it created a caution flag for beta-carotene, which is warranted because beta-carotene is kind of an artificial thing. It used to be made by Kodak, interestingly. You know, they made film.
Kodak cameras. Film?
It's not made from Kodak film, but it's one of the things. Yeah, Kodak company. Kodak owned the patent on beta carotene, so the vast majority of the beta carotene in the world was made by Kodak, and it's highly synthetic, and it's sort of a very narrow spectrum of the rainbow of the carotenoids that we find in fresh fruits and vegetables that are red, yellow, and green. And so it turns out that it may not be that effective for cancer prevention. Some studies said that it was helpful for cancer prevention. Other studies said it promoted cancer. So now manufacturers have, it's kind of obsolete to argue that beta-carotene is bad because the vast majority of people don't take beta-carotene anymore. Our multivitamin hasn't had beta-carotene in it since, I don't know, the 1990s.
Yeah.
And we continue modifying our vitamins based on the latest findings. Mm-hmm. So the manufacturers who make our supplements that contain some form of vitamin A, there's mixed carotenoids in them that more closely resemble nature. And then they also pointed out that vitamin E was potentially a cancer promoter. But again, all the studies are based on alpha-tocopherol, which blocks the valuable gamma-tocopherol. Most studies show that gamma-tocopherol is the protective factor against cancer. And so until they do studies of gamma-tocopherol, which
you
are long overdue, we don't know this.
What angers me, though, Dr. Hoffman, is they keep bringing up previous research that we've already debunked.
Yes, yes. Right.
And
well, I mean,
they're counting on the reader not remembering that or not knowing about that and just, you know, believing everything they read.
But hey,
unfortunately.
You know, let's pick a realm that you're not that familiar with, like a legal realm, or you know, I don't know, maybe you are, but I'm not. I'm not legal. And so if somebody had a headline in all the major newspapers saying, don't use the internet for any kind of financial transaction. Well, actually, this is pretty close to the truth. I'd be picked a bad example because 100% chance you will have your account hacked and you'll have all your money confiscated. The fact remains is that you have a fair chance of getting your account
That's
hacked.
True.
It's actually
closer to
the truth than vitamins cause cancer. But let's pick something in the engineering realm, or I know that your husband is well acquainted with that, so he could debunk that. But if you see a lurid headline that's a scare kind of headline, you might say, "Hey, maybe there really is something to that." I mean, this is our beat. We live it and breathe it. We read the scientific articles, but the public will see a headline that says that vitamins can cause cancer. They'll say, "Hey, you know, that gives me pause. You know, maybe I'm thinking I'm doing myself a lot of good, and I'm giving myself cancer." Anyway, I wrote a very extensive rebuttal of that. I'll post more and more articles because I think more and more people in our field will publish intelligent, well thought out, well reasoned counter arguments to this notion. And
I look forward to reading that. Good.
Yeah, but you can get a summary of the facts around the vitamin relationship to cancer in my article. I'll also talk about B vitamins and the possibility that folic acid, which again is an obsolete, soon to be, I think, completely replaced by folate, you know, more natural forms of that B vitamin. We just recently did that with our multi, so that our multi doesn't contain synthetic folic acid, but actually natural folate. So, we got to keep up with the findings.
That's true.
And by the way, there are some studies that show that folic acid, even the old form, has nothing to do with cancer. And, you know, large studies that show, no, that's not the case. So they've taken a controversy, which is a half-baked controversy, and they've escalated it into an innuendo that's going to be hard to, you know, once you poison the well, it's kind of hard to drink the water again.
That's true. That's true.
So, anyway, that's a little digression on the subject.
Yeah.
Yeah. So check out drhoffman.com. And, you know, I also did a recent podcast with Lee Zalschuler a couple of weeks ago, where she is a cancer practitioner. She's a naturopath who'd written terrific books on cancer. The Definitive Guide to Cancer. She's wonderful and very, very scholarly on the subject. And, you know, we talked about that. Is the potential for certain supplements to maybe not be right for cancer patients? And she has addressed that and has developed a line of supplements that emphasize the right supplements and de-emphasize the ones that might be potentially getting in the way of recovery for cancer patients. So
interacting with chemotherapy or something.
Yeah, that's some such thing. Right. Well, so we talked to Dr. Mitch Gaynor in a previous podcast the same week about that very subject. So, you know, this is, you know, it's almost like we're sitting here in damage control mode. You know, Mehmet Oz got attacked last week as well.
Yeah.
And delivered a very detailed rebuttal on his show, and we covered that story as well. Homeopathy under attack as well. The FDA wants to make, perhaps not all, but some homeopathic remedies by prescription only, which I think is misguided.
That's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. Yeah. Well, we'll see how all this pans out.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will trudge forward.
We're there for you on this beat. I mean, this is what we do.
Right.
It's like, welcome to damage control.
Yeah. Speaking of more damage control.
Yeah.
Our first question or comment, and I'm sure this is going to be a long comment on behalf of you and I.
Yeah.
This comes from an email from Flicker, is his name, and it's about how meat may cause colon cancer.
Right.
And it's purported that, you know, just a little explanation here, that eating a high meat diet causes the liver to make more bile, and bile is full of a chemical called lithocholic acid.
Right.
Which helps us digest fat. However, it's probably the most toxic compound that your body makes. And lithocholic acid damages the DNA, the genetic material in cells, and giving animals high concentrations of lithocholic acid causes colon cancer. Here's my argument here. When we secrete bile, it's not only in response to eating meat, it's in response to eating fat. So what we have to throw into that pool of our fatty foods is our olive oil, our nuts and seeds, our avocados, our good grass-fed butter, our fatty salmon, and our fatty tuna, all of that. So what, pray tell, does anybody say to that?
Right.
So it can't be just about the lithocholic acid. Since the liver creates it to create bile, bile is the substrate for detoxification. When somebody undergoes a detoxification program, they're taking supplements to secrete more bile, dandelion and clover and so forth. So we have to turn this totally upside down.
Well, let me turn it even further upside down, because as you talked, through the miracle of the Internet, it's easy to search these things. I have a headline that is diametrically opposed to the contention of this person who writes us a letter. Uh-huh. Often people make up their mind that they're vegetarian, in my opinion, and I wrote an article about this, Confessions of an Ex-Vegan, and then they muster arguments to support that. And one argument is that the toxic bile, you know, can create cancer. But here's something really interesting. Headline, lithocholic acid kills cancer cells but not healthy cells. How about that? Check that out. Check it out. The ability of an acid that is naturally produced in the liver during digestion, called lithocholic acid, have seriously been underestimated until now. It turns out that lithocholic acid can kill several types of cancer cells, including those found in some brain tumors and breast cancer. The discovery could pave the way for a major improvement of existing chemotherapy drugs. So, on the one hand, you have this person saying, well, lithocholic acid is carcinogenic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is possible because certain substances have a duality of effect. One of the main reasons for the conclusion that meat causes cancer is based on the studies that show that people who consume meat, probably the wrong kind of meat, have a higher risk of cancer. It is also the case that a lot of people who consume a lot of meat don't consume enough vegetables.
Pretty much a lot of junk food. As you've described before, the meat eaters are also the beer drinkers and the smokers.
I know some people who, and they're dear friends of mine, but they eat abysmally, and we don't talk about it. But they're generally pretty unhealthy and prematurely aged, and their idea of a healthy meal is like a steak and maybe some instant mashed potatoes, lots of bread, and... And they hate vegetables. They just don't eat any vegetables. So this is an example of how meat eating might contribute to cancer. Also, the char on meat is harmful, but it can be counteracted by eating lots of
the heterocyclic amines that are formed in
HCAs,
grilling the meat and charring it and burning and the PAH is the polyaromatic hydrocarbons.
But this can be counteracted with these polyphenols that you take with tea, green tea or black tea or even coffee. But also the polyphenols that you get from fresh fruits and vegetables, particularly
marinating the meat. The meat first is also helpful.
Yeah.
And also cooking on a lower flame so there's less tendency to char is always a good idea.
Right. Don't tell me that, because I am known in the barbecue world as the blacksmith.
You like a nice char in your salmon, right?
Well, yeah. I am a little...
Well, it's good that way, Grill Marks, yeah.
I go a little overboard, and it's like, you have to have, call the fire department because I'm grilling, the other thing that's interesting, and I remember even before I went to medical school, so this might be the 1970s when I had a job before I went to medical school, I was working at a hospital. And they put up a sign recruiting people. They give you, something like $25 to submit a stool sample. I said, great, because mm-hmm. $25 was a lot in those days for me. So I said, great, I'll give a stool sample for $25. And it was a study of the relationship between diet and the composition of the stool vis-a-vis the bacteria that they thought were responsible for colon cancer. And at the time, I was a vegetarian, and they were very happy.
Right, you were macrobiotic then, weren't you?
I was a vegan vegetarian macrobiotic, so they got so the study, for a while, they were saying that the bacteria that proliferate in people who eat meat is different than the bacteria. And, you change your flora with your diet. There's no question.
Yeah.
So, however, that theory has gotten a little played out, is that you can't reliably reproduce the conditions of cancer with a high meat diet. Mm-hmm. So this theory has been floating around for a while that you change your flora in a harmful way with meat consumption, but it has to do with other things.
It does.
It may have to do with antibiotic use. It may have to do with how much fiber you consume.
Mm-hmm.
Meat eaters sometimes don't consume enough fiber.
That's true.
Consume a ton of fiber.
Or how much other processed foods that they're eating. It's not about the meat, it's the other processed and junk foods.
Right.
The refined carbs, the sugars, all of those, the trans fats, all of it.
So it's
the sugary sodas,
Right. So they thought this is, how long ago was that? That was like 35 years ago. They thought they had nailed it down to a species of bacteria that grew in response to meat consumption. But here we are 35 years later, and that theory hasn't really been strictly borne out.
Yeah.
The recent study in China, they talk about the China, what's that book by Colin Campbell?
China study.
Right. It's not really a study. I mean, if that's
a
study.
It's not really a study is right.
Yeah. Then the graffiti that we find in the subway is the Metropolitan Museum of Art, if that's a study. Mm-hmm. Because it's basically a series of anecdotes and correlations, not really a study.
And cherry-picked research, of which many of the methodologies are just not, without integrity.
A recent study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition looked at that same Asian population, and they found actually no increase in cancer risk with increased animal protein intake.
Yeah.
This problem with these studies, and, when I researched the article on could vitamins cause cancer, I saw sometimes diametrically opposed conclusions about the effects of one vitamin or another. For example, folic acid. There are some studies that say, folic acid is carcinogenic. It's a cancer promoter. There are other studies that say we gave folic acid to these people for years and years and years, and there are thousands of people, and there was no increase in colon cancer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
that's just, and then you can do a meta-analysis picking the studies that prove your point.
Yeah,
because meta-analyses are selecting studies from the vast literature, and you pick studies that qualify for your meta-analysis. Well, you may be biased by your own point of view.
Yeah, that's true.
So anyway, so I think we kind of disposed of that, but I love that I found this article that the lithocholic acid, the very self-same thing that this wonky listener told us about, is now being considered as a unique natural cancer treatment agent. Mm. How about that?
Look at that. Wow.
Yeah.
Bile's got to be good. It helps us to detoxify.
If you don't have any bile, you will have fat malabsorption, and then you're really in trouble.
Oh, then you're really in trouble, and you're not going to detoxify well. You're not going to absorb you're going to have very, very smelly stools. It's called steatorrhea.
Right.
And you're going to know something is wrong.
And you also, the bile is also the way you detoxify.
Yes.
So you detoxify harmful environmental chemicals through bile, and women detoxify their own estrogen through bile.
Yes.
So without bile, you don't get adequate enteropathic circulation, which helps to remove toxic substances from the liver and via the stool, which is a pathway of elimination.
And bile helps to emulsify and digest and absorb our fats, and fat is an essential macronutrient.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Forget that low-fat mantra. All right, that's a pretty good point at which to pause. People who enjoy these podcasts know that we divide these podcasts into two parts. Please join us for part two, wherein we will discuss what's coming up next.
What's coming up next? I'm taking a lot of vitamin D, and I can't get my level past 38. What's going on?
All right, what to do? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.